pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Declarations of War Podcast. I am your host, Alexa Avkar, joined by my faithful co-hosts, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
Leva Tane.
Good evening, everyone.
And our very special guest from the Signal Cartel, Katya Say.
Hello, hello.
So happy to have you here. You've been making headlines, and for damn good reasons, a absolutely monumental achievement that is literally changing the game in that they're putting in something from the game to honor you. If you haven't heard, Katya has visited every star system, period.
Lies. Fake news.
Every star system except the Alliance tournament systems. Which, you know, yeah, it's a little asterisk, Katya. I don't know, you might have to take care of that at some point.
Yeah, maybe throw some ISKIs around.
Yeah. But still, that's ridiculous. How many star systems is that?
7,805, and that was prior to the Polaris visit, so you can add one to that now.
How was Polaris? Like, what is it like? What's the nebula look like? Like, describe it to us.
Falcon, he took me out there, of course, and he did say that this is like the closest you would be to Caroline's star. So that was pretty cool to see. It is bigger in the sky. I did take pictures and stuff, and they are going to allow me to share those. I just haven't shared them yet. But, I mean, it's like any other star system, really. In New Eden, the sky is a little different, and I do hope to share those pictures soon.
Oh, so they let you document the trip, so to speak.
They did, yeah. Part of my journey in known space was I visited every planet and took a picture of every system as I went along. So they let me kind of follow through with that methodology when I was in Polaris. So Falcon actually warped me to every planet and all the stations and the sun and everything. So that was really cool.
Wow.
There were about 30 or so devs and GMs in there. They had a big fireworks party for me when I first came in, which was totally awesome. I think it actually outdid our Signal Cartel signature hugs fleet that we typically do.
I love the hugs fleet's concept. All right. Before all this, you were not an EVE player. What got you started?
I'm actually a Earth and Beyond refugee. I'm sure there's many folks out there that have heard of that MMO that was like the year before, I think, EVE Online actually came online. So that's where I came from. And as that game was dwindling and dying, caught wind of EVE. And I think my oldest character's birth date is like June of 2003. So that's how I came to be here.
And what was the experience which made you stick? When you're like, oh, this is the game for me. I'm not going anywhere.
You know, it's funny. I've had a love-hate relationship with EVE over the years, but of all the MMOs and various games I've played online, EVE's the only one that I've ever come back to over and over again. It's kind of hard to put your finger on it, really. It's just something about the deadliness of the universe. You know, I guess you could say I'm a bit of a hardcore kind of role player that, you know, there should be consequences to your actions, right? None of this Care Bear stuff of, you know, you die, you get your stuff back. I don't believe in that. I really think when you die, you should lose your stuff and learn from the lesson that took place, you know. So that's probably the core concept that kept me around.
And you say that, that's interesting. One fact we didn't mention about your accomplishment is you did not lose a ship in that entire journey.
That is correct. And people have asked me to explain that, and I don't know if I can.
So you just... It just never happened? Like, how does that... Because I would think at some point you'd run into a bubble. At some point you'd run into a smart bomber.
Yeah, it's a fair question. It's depending on the area of space, I did different things. I definitely had a different mindset with Katya than I do with my other characters. I mean, I've lost ships. I've been caught on my alts more than once over the years. And the Bacardi, I just went with a different approach. And not that I intended to not lose a ship. I had backup ships ready to go. And I even had an in-character story written up for my blog that explained my first loss. You know, I just had to fill in details. But in known space, I took an intelligence approach and I took it slow. I think most people that have tried this before and have successfully done it, but they've lost ships, is they go lightning speed, right? They just blaze a trail and run as fast as they can, and they get it done in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. But I just took it very methodical and slow and did my homework before I got to a system. I'd use .lan and see the kills. I'd use eKillboard to see who's in the area. So a lot of my time was spent just on intelligence gathering and understanding the space that I was in.
Interesting. Yeah, I checked eKillboard. You do not exist, according to their database.
I do not exist. You're right.
He's a ghost.
And that's awesome. I was just going to quickly say that is one of the funniest stories on my venture out to NullSec, is I ran into someone that was trying to find me on zKillboard, and they didn't speak English very well. And they were trying to figure out, you know, they were like, no Killboard, or why are you not on Killboard? And it was very hard to me to explain that I've never been caught.
What time zone were you like flying in when you were doing your exploration?
I'm Eastern U.S. time zone. And part of my strategy, again, in known space, I mean, none of this applies to wormhole space because you just don't know where you're going to land in wormhole space. But part of my strategy was trying to find those off hours for a particular area, right? Like LOSEC, if it's typically known for gate camps and that kind of thing, then I would try to determine through the intelligence gathering, you know, what time of day is at least likely to be there. And so either early morning U.S., I'd pop on and try to hit those systems, or late at night and that kind of thing.
Did anyone come close? Like, was there any specific incidents that happened? You thought, oh, this guy is going to get me, or they may actually catch me.
There's more stories on those than I can even count them on my hands. You know, that happened quite a lot. Usually a lot of one-on-ones, mostly out in NullSec. There were the bubble camps and those kind of things that tried to catch me. The funniest story, though, I'll tell you the funniest one, because all the other stories pretty much sound the same. You know, you're challenged at the gate or whatever, and you just manage to get away. But the funniest one was actually in Brave Space. This was like in 2014, I think it was, down in the south in Ketch, I think. And they were talking in local about setting up a Sino and having a freighter jump in. And my first thought was, why are you talking in local knowing there's, you know, neutral in here and blatantly talking about what you're about to do? But I'd never seen a Sino in game. And I thought, well, that'd be really cool to see. So I pop over to the station. I mean, they're telling me part of it is probably a bait or something, you know. And so I pop over there just so I can watch this thing come in. I thought that'd be so cool. And sure enough, they light up the Sino, and I'm going, oh, man, this is awesome. Let me get some screenshots. But instead of hitting the key sequence to get the screenshot, I fumble, and I hit the decloak. And so now I'm uncloaked right there at the at the station. And, man, you talk about scrambling. I was scrambling. My heart was up in my throat. It was a funny closest encounter that I think I ever had.
So I have a question about the wormhole portion, not how you survived it, but just how you did it in the first place. And I guess maybe the answer is you just spent a lot of time, but wormholes are quite random. How did you go to every one of them? How were you even checking that you went to every one of them? Like, did you have a spreadsheet of like 2,700 systems or whatever it is?
I absolutely did have a spreadsheet. You're right. That was the most challenging part of the journey, honestly, because like you said, it is very random. There's no map that you can go to and say, I'm going to hit these systems in the sequence. So therefore, there's no intelligence gathering you can do. And so it was a very difficult leg of the journey. And after 2 years at it, I was averaging a little over 500 systems a year. And there's 2,600 of them. And I did the math and I was like, I've got 3 or 4 more years to go. This just isn't going to cut it. And, you know, as you find them, it gets harder, right? Because fewer and fewer systems to find, and the randomness of it is just going to be like impossible. So I engaged my corp. I've been a member of Signal Cartel since the beginning, And I started tossing ideas around with Minxie, saying, hey, Minxie, I think what I want to do here is I want to start running a corp event to help me find the last systems, and we'll make it fun, and we'll have prizes and whatnot. And she pointed me to our – we have an OPSEC team that they do special events and operations for the corp, and they, we actually have this storyline in behind the scenes. And they actually wrote a cover story to hide the fact what this was all about. And we have, you may have heard of Allison, our artificial intelligence that was written by A.D. Parrott. And we engaged him and the OPSEC team. And when I got down to the last 600 wormhole systems, we engaged the corp. And what Allison did for us, for those that participated in what we called the Great Hunt, Allison would notify me and my, I had three trustworthy mates that I included, and that was iGaze, Captain Crinkle, and Tamayo. We would be alerted when one of our scouts found the system that I needed. And the scouts didn't even know that they were finding the systems for me, which is amazing. And we would scramble to get to those locations as quick as we could so that I could get the system. You know, hopefully our scouts used tripwire, so they had their routes in there and everything and all filled in. And sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't, so we'd have to scan them down ourselves. But that's how I got the last 600.
That's pretty awesome. Now, once you got to the systems, was it just like dip your toe in, get out with your screenshot, or did you sightsee?
That was part of the journey that I wanted to make sure I did different, right? Because everyone that has done it before and since, you know, they sped through the systems, and I wanted to make sure that I spent some time in them. And in known space, I did that by taking a picture of every planet along the way. So I was in every system for at least 10 minutes or so. Before I moved on to the next one. In wormhole space, that actually translated into scanning down signatures. That's where my time was spent. I didn't actually take a picture of every planet in wormhole space, just because of time constraints. You know, that swapped out for signature scanning there.
And so this is a multi-year journey. During that point, did you ever hit a challenge, or was there ever a time when you were like, ah, this isn't worth it, I shouldn't keep doing this?
Yeah, I had 2 points over the years. Calendar time, it took about 9 years to complete, a little over 9 years to complete, but there was a 2-year gap in there where I was not engaged with the game at all due to real life reasons at the time. And I'd taken my blog down, I'd backed it up. Didn't know if I'd be back or not, but then the opportunity came and things, you know, real life transitioned to where I could come back. And so I came back and my blog was backup was corrupt. So I wasn't able to restore my blog and I almost quit then. I said, you know what? Forget it. But I pushed through it anyway and continued on my journey. And to answer your question is what was the biggest thing to stop me? And really the biggest thing was burnout. Like I said, when I got to the end of 2017 and looked back on my wormhole so far, 500 systems a year on the wormholes, I almost quit then. I was like, you know, this just isn't cutting it unless I can step this game up. And so 2018, I spent stepping the game up by hitting more wormhole systems each day and then engaging a signal cartel at the end there.
Well, now that you've done it... aside from heading over to Sisio to check out your brand new statue, what's next?
Oh, that's a tough one. The biggest thing I'm struggling with at the moment is trying to keep the achievement pure. And what I mean by that is not giving anyone the opportunity to pop my ship or get my corpse, right? And so I'm really struggling with the thought of undocking right now. Because I know there's this huge target on my back at the moment.
Oh, that's interesting.
One of my corp mates actually said yesterday, I think it was, that there was a group that came through Seishio and said, where's Katia? We're here to get her.
All right. Well, that was awesome. Katia, I'm really glad you're with us. Stick with us for the rest of the show. We got a few other stories to talk about. There's a pretty meaty balance pass coming to Eve really soon with, I would say, not everything the community has wanted for a while, but a couple big ticket items people have been posting about a lot lately. Let's get into it, Artemis.
It's freaking nuts, dude. Like, this has got to be the most influential balance pass of recent memory. In fact, it is the most influential balance pass I can remember. And I would reckon the biggest part of that is they are literally changing an entire core game mechanic with the new... Is it part of this balance pass? Yeah. With the new remote repair... What do they call it? Tank scaling is the way they call it. It's diminishing returns to your remote repair. And a point of clarification here. This is not stacking penalties. So your repair does not go down based on the number of modules you have active. It's diminishing returns based on the amount of rep per second cumulative on a particular ship. And if you have any questions or you're confused about that, go to the dev blog. They've got fancy graphs on it. I'm still waiting for some proper formulas so I can do the math on this and so we can find out like how good dread bombs are going to be, because dread insurance is changing and other various things. But this is a massive change for a lot of the game.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure how I feel about it yet, because I still want Logi to have a role, and it seems like if you have more than like 5 Logi ships in your fleet, they are kind of pointless.
I'm not so sure. They mentioned specifically that the subcat ones are much less heavily affected than the fax ones. This is primarily a massive engagement with large amounts of fax either side.
Yeah. What do you think about like a ship can put out 800 damage, hypothetically in your fleet? And then you have a rep ship, and it puts out 1,000 repair units. But then you have 2 rep ships, and now they both put out 900, and then 3 both put out 800. At what point do you like, oh, another Guardian? Can you get in damage, please?
Well, you'd need... It doesn't scale down that quickly, because mainly they want this to affect the efficacy of fax reps. And so looking at the graphs here, they didn't really label it particularly well or explain it well. So I'm not sure if it's the number of reps, which is how they describe it,
yep,
or if
it is
the number of guardians.
It's the number of reps.
So it looks like, but like how many reps did they have fit to whatever ship that they're using?
It's not individual reps. It's the total hit points repaired per second.
That's not what they labeled it as, though. So like they have, I'm looking specifically at their cruiser graph, and
as
far as number of reps is concerned, I'm assuming they stuck it on a Guardian, but we don't know. And in any case, you're going to be looking at like 30 to 40 Logi before you're even down to 80% effectiveness on the next rep added. And it's not the way you described it, where if it's 2 reps, then they're only 90% effective. Obviously, you're using hyperbole there to get your point across. But it's not the case where adding 1 rep will diminish the effectiveness of all the other reps previously on the ship. It is that when your rep is added, there is a modifier on the ship that is determined based on the amount of rep per second currently on that ship. And that modifier will then affect how much incoming rep is received from the rep being added. So all other reps which are currently on the ship aren't affected. It's just however much extra rep you're adding on to it is what's affected. And then, of course, as the other reps which are already on cycle over, the same calculation happens again, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not going to diminish all of the reps. It's just any additional reps.
How do we think this is going to change the dynamics of subcat PvP? What ships are going to become more valuable? What ships are going to become less valuable?
I mean, if you look at the graph itself and you look about when you see 40 reps, so if you imagine that's 10 guardians and a 4-2 configuration, 4 armor reps, 2 cap chain modules, and there's virtually no difference there in stuff. So there's going to be virtually no difference or any engagement when you're even talking 10, 15 guardians, which you're talking about, that could be anywhere from like a 70 to 100 man per side fleet. It will probably have more of an impact when you start looking at really massive engagements. So Horde going against Test in Perimeter, for example, and they're all feeding full Ferex or Megafron fleets. You know, it's for the really, really big engagements. I think the Triglavian ships may be a subtle benefactor because obviously they only have one rep.
Well, the thing is, because it isn't based on the number of modules, it's based on the amount of rep per second, it's not going to matter that they only have one rep. All that matters is how much rep output they're giving.
I do think they may be a subtle benefactor in that it would suggest to me that if reps in general become less valuable, even if it's only dropping efficacy by 10 or 20% at scale, that alpha becomes a little less important than DPS. So you may see a slight shift away from high alpha strike comps to ships that are doing more damage per second.
And if that is the case, then you're going to see a subsequent shift in reducing the amount of buffer fit to ships and an increase in the amount of resist fit to ships. Because if you are getting less rep per second, you can get more effective rep per second by having higher resists. And so that's one of the reasons I think this is going to be a slight buff to shield reps. Because if we do see this sort of initially people swap to away from high alpha, because you can suddenly just damage through things, and then people counter this by fitting more resistance, shield reps, because you activate the shield reps at the start of the cycle versus armor reps at the end of the cycle, you can get away with less buffer and have higher resists as a result. And so I think shield reps will be better off at the very higher scales because of that ability to apply the reps sooner. There is, of course, the counter that shields typically have lower resists as a base than armor does. So it'll be a question of where that balance will occur. It's also worth noting one point that wasn't mentioned specifically in the dev blog, but that we have gotten confirmed. It's that there is a separate, There's a separate damage modifier, diminishing modifier for shield and for armor. So shield reps, the amount of shield reps on a ship will not affect how effective armor reps are going to be. This is particularly important when you're looking at super capitals. Indeed, people are speculating that armor supers just got a pretty significant buff because it is easier to dual tank armor supers. And so now you can drop your armor supers and drop a shield fax fleet and an armor fax fleet, and you won't have to have, and basically one of those fleets isn't going to be diminished by the other. Whereas with a shield super capital fleet, it is much more difficult to tank them, dual tank them. You really need the PDSs and the lows in order to get the EHP per second passive regen plus the buff to their HP pool. And so this is speculatively a pretty significant buff to armor supers.
I also try to think of like what specific ships would fit that profile of like a higher resist profile. For shield on subcaps, you got the Ferox. You got the Drake. You got your hacks, obviously, like Serbs. I think on the other side, what armor ships might there be?
Prophecy.
And the big one that comes to mind, the Prophecy, yes, but also the Abaddon, which we haven't seen in a long time.
And the Abaddon is actually getting a buff in this patch. What is the specific buff that it gets?
It's from 5% to 7.5% damage per level, which on a dual heatsink pulse Abaddon can potentially push his DPS by about 50 to 70 without heat.
Well, it's still going to have a little trouble with hitting the range on the Ferox specifically, but the Ferox is also getting a slight nerf, so maybe the Drake comes back in. Who knows?
The Ferox it kind of takes the Ferox right now. It doesn't take away any of its strengths, and it just basically makes the Ferox weaknesses a little bit more vulnerable. But they were always vulnerable, so they're reducing the align speed, reducing the speed, increasing the sig radius. They were already sitting up for bomber fleets anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also of note, medium beam lasers, optimal range increased by 10%. We've already been foaming at the mouth for the Zealot to come back into vogue.
I'm in two minds about this one. I mean, they're basically taking the medium beam laser, which is currently the meta on some of the most powerful ships and well-used ships in low sec, primarily the Legion, and you're basically giving it more range. The Zealot, yes, I absolutely agree with. Harbingers as well. Please fix autocannons. Please.
Okay.
What's wrong with autocannons?
I don't think anything with autocannons is going to make medium beams any less popular, though.
Why are you comparing autocannons to beams? I am so confused.
I'm not comparing a ship class. I'm just maligning the fact that autocannons are fairly underpowered at the medium meta. But I appreciate, yes, beams, yeah, they're pretty decent. Threat rails are better. And the arties are in a very good place right now, a la Munin.
Yeah, there was a point brought up, and we'll discuss the CSM minutes soon, TM, like in a later episode. But there is a point which Killer B brought up pretty emphatically that Arty's 720s can cycle twice before armor reps will land in the majority of cases. And So that is one of the reasons why Munins are so effective, is because their alpha is effectively double what their alpha is on paper.
Oh, yeah. While we're going over the individual ship highlight changes, I think there are two which are pretty cool. One, the Korax getting a PG increase. Thank fucking God. the Korax is one of the best looking destroyers in the game. It's one of the best looking ships in the game, but it always had a major fitting problem. Now it may not have that fitting problem. I'm very excited to take that into EFT and see what 5 extra grid can get it.
It's a bit tricky. I've had a bit of a play myself. I mean, it gives you more flexibility on current fits. It doesn't allow anything spectacular, but then I only had a small play.
I mean, I like the light missile Korax, so if that makes it more viable, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
How does... You're so slow, though. Like, is the Korax still slower than a Mauler?
70-kilometer range control, man.
It's a cheap jackdaw. Yeah.
You have 70-kilometer range, but I think you are lacking range control because literally anything can catch you.
No. Not range control, sphere of control. Oh, you basically have 70 kilometers of no frigate zone because they can't miss. So you're just like, just be with your fleet and shoot every frigate and destroyer within 70 kilometers and it will die. That's pretty great. No other destroyer can boast that.
Except, like, well, no other T1 destroyer. Except the Cormorant. But the Cormorant can miss.
The Cormorant can definitely miss. And will often miss, actually, because the range you need to get out that far, you need the Tech 2 ammo. Tech 2 ammo has a tracking penalty.
But even at that range, tracking is pretty minimal at that point, because most destroyers have tracking bonuses. If you're at 100 kilometers... and with even with spikes, something has to be going insanely quickly or be 100 kilometers away from you to basically out-track spike.
And for the record, with the typical longbow fit, T1 corms with iron will reach out to 70. You need spike to reach out to 100, which is what you really want to be using in the corms, especially if you're combining them with bushers. But as far as the 70 benchmark, which is the range of the Korax, you can do it with a T1.
Fine, still much better looking.
They look like ships.
Style never won a fight, but it never hurt.
Katya, I don't know about you, but I don't think the Korax looks that great. What do you think?
I think the Astero is the best looking ship in the game.
Okay, but like, destroyer-wise, I think the Thrasher looks better than the Korax.
Get out. you're trolling now.
No, like, legitimately, do you remember the freaking concept art for the horrible redesign of the Thrasher that is, hallelujah, it has disappeared, like, it's been pushed to the back burner somewhere and forgotten about by CCP? Like, the Thrasher is actually a fantastic looking ship. It's got, like, freaking gills. It looks like, every time I see it, I think of the Ghoul from Stargate.
Looks like a brown fish.
I would pay good money for every time the Thrasher fires to shout Jaffa Cree.
Speaking of drones, though, which we kind of were with the Astero, Vexor Navy issue, bonus to max drone velocity removed. That's a major nerf.
I mean, one of the big things about the VNI, it has 150 drone base, so it can light, have a full flight of heavies, and I think some lights. And typically speaking, certainly when you're kind of hunting VNIs in low sec, only scepters can outrun the heavy drones. So this is a nerf for them. And indeed, the travel time between the NIs, particularly those that are running, say, the 100 mega Newton armor repper setups, it means they've got more chance of losing their flight of drones if they have to get out quickly.
It's also worth noting that the VNI bonus to drone max velocity didn't just apply to their heavy drones, it applied to all their drones.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had exceptionally fast medium and light drones, and that is one of the big complaints from like the small gang solo PvPers who are trying to go around VNI hunting, is it's very hard to make a ship which can go fast enough to kite those drones. And when you have 3 to 4 DDA fit VNIs, that's a lot of damage coming at you. And so this change, it's not only that like their heavy drones are slower and so they're going to get lower ticks when they're ratting, it's also that it's now significantly easier to kill them. And like for low sec purposes, as far as the old armor neuting VNI fleets, they're pretty much dead. Rest in peace.
Speaking of drones, the Gila's had its HP bonus cut in half, which is nice.
I feel like Alec, as a representative of Calcif, is going to like rage about this.
But you know what? I'm fine with it. I think the Gila is a great ship, but it's also like that really good song that you like, but you hear it on the radio too many times. Undone. Like, it's such an overused ship that I feel bad when I fly it. It's like, ugh.
All it's of the pretty impressive. Abyssal runners cry out in pain.
Yeah, it's used for abyssal running, it's used for sight running, it's a PvP thing. It's like, oh, come on.
Well, the thing that gets me is, apart from abyssals, drone aggro in the majority of PvE scenarios is so minimal that this is not going to affect it. This HP roll bonus reduction affects abyssal sites, which is probably a good thing, and it affects PvP. And I don't think the drone HP was a problem in PvP, because you could already defang Gila feats pretty freaking easily with even medium smart bombs or just focused defanging.
It will help tackling like ratting Gilas and stuff like that, because you may not have tons of DPS that apply to drones. So that
fair point.
Cutting it in half is pretty nice.
Yeah, if you're trying to kill a ratting Gila in your freaking retribution or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting easier. But then again, you're killing a pirate faction cruiser solo in your assault frigate, so I feel like you should stop whining.
Well, that's the thing. I'll actually get to do it now. I'll stop whining once I get the kill mails.
Other changes. So the Caracal Navy issue actually gets a drone bay, which is kind of moot point because who uses a Caracal Navy issue?
No, Lave. This is the change that's going to bring it back into the fleet meta. Where do you see?
Warriors.
The most possible sarcasm.
And then the Cyclone gets some CPU, which is helpful because obviously the majority of shield fit Cyclones tend to suffer in terms of CPU. Shield modules are really, really heavy on CPU, especially the extra large modules. So this is helpful.
Am I remembering incorrectly, or did the Cyclone's fitting get nerfed recently because it was like out of balance with everything else? I feel like, oh, it was its power grid that got reduced to deal with, like, the dual XLASB, if I'm remembering correctly.
Because mm-hmm.
I feel like the Cyclone is already a fairly strong ship in the solo small gang PvP meta as far as T1 battlecruisers are concerned, just because of its HP bonus. It's got the good utility highs. Of course, you can fit links to it. The ASB fits are just super popular. I feel like it's less popular now just because carriers get dropped on everything and battlecruiser SIGs rest in peace. Plus, it doesn't have a good bonus for the use of rapid lights, so you're pretty much stuck with hams, and so application to small frigates, particularly assault frigates, which are in vogue now, you're going to suffer there. But
let's talk about the other major change. There's Oh, a few more. Speaking of fighters, they're getting reduced damage application. Not tons, but any little bit will help. The network sensor array, I think that's what NSA stands for, it will now disable warp on carriers. It's pretty big.
Yeah, so the NSA, for people who don't really know, is a module that carriers can activate. When it does it, drastically increases their signature scan resolution so they can lock down frigates in seconds, but it creates a massive penalty to EWAR, so to tackling, for example. So I think it increases the cap by about thousands of percent, so you just can't use a warp disruptor on it because it'll just cap you out. Previously, you'd often warp into a site, activate your NSA, align out, bad enter systems, recall fighters, and just off you swan off to your site, to your respective escape point. Now, if your NSA is there, you can't warp for that 60 seconds while it's cycling.
Which opens up the prospect for more carriers dying. Seems pretty good to me.
You'll see a big meta shift.
There is a slight workaround where you can get very similar scan resolution bonuses to what the NSA gives you with faction sensor boosters, and even their rigs and such. So, like, you can get that scan resolution back, and even to a certain extent, the amount of scan res you got from the NSA may have just been a bit more than you really need in order to carry a rat effectively. So we'll probably see carrier ratting still be a pretty significant thing. It depends on how much the application nerf affects their ability to clear sites in time, specifically the small ships, because the small ships already have pretty significant fighter aggro. So if you're killing those small ships slower, they're killing your fighters more often. And so I think that'll be a bigger impact than this NSA change, because you can work around it with sensor boosters. Although, if you're fitting sensor boosters, you're trading off your tank, usually. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I mean, most... And another big Sorry, Gatley.
I was just going to say, I think this will affect the kind of the supers maybe slightly less, insofar that they have enough kind of spare modules, if you will, to simply have some kind of tank on there and enough EHP to really cause problems. But every little helps.
Another big one, Titans losing 50% of their HAW DPS.
I don't think this is going to solve anything.
Nope.
I agree.
Like, as far as the complaints about their effectiveness against subcapitals and fleets, there are enough Titans in these Titan fleets with HAWs to still be effective against subcapital fleets. They just now each put out 2.5k damage instead of 5k, and that's still plenty. As far as killing frigates, they're still going to do that. You didn't need the 5k damage to insta-volley frigates. 2.5k will still volley frigates. It's not... Like, it's a step in the right direction as far as the fleet side of things, and maybe there are some frigates or destroyers which will now just get volleyed into half-hull instead of volleyed completely. Oh boy!
I would have much rather have seen them remove HAWs from Titans completely.
Titans should have a very specific role. And its current ability to use HAW to basically make it to create a ball of death for close range subcat fleets is just ridiculous. Even though you say 2.5k DPS Titans, given how many of them there are, is ridiculous.
It's still my position. You got to nerf the range. There is no reason HAW should just have like a base. I think it's 30% more range than I did the math at one point, but I forgot what it was. On average, the range buff you get between large weapons and HAWs. But if you nerf that range, suddenly the tracking is going to be less because you're engaging things which are closer to you and the transversal is higher and you have to use shorter or longer range ammo, which is going to have lower tracking. And I think I've had this discussion like 3 or 4 times, and I really wish somebody would start like listening or tell me how I'm crazy, because it's just like
preaching
doing
to the choir,
all of the
buddy.
Wrong things.
I would love to hear from the other side of, like, why HAWs need to remain as they are, or why Titans still need them. Because I haven't heard a good argument from anyone, but CCB still keeps them in. I assume there's an argument out there, because I'm sure they're not doing it for no reason, but it's unclear to me.
So there is an argument that the ship is expensive, and so it should be able to defend itself. It's not a good argument, but it's an argument that is out there and being used. There is also an argument that CCP likes elegant solutions to problems, and so just banning HAWs on Titans, it's not particularly elegant. There isn't a particular lore thing to go with it. My counter-argument to that would be, have you guys seen the panic module and that you have to lock an asteroid in order for it to work? What in the world is elegant and lore-related about that, guys? if it's a problematic mechanic, just drop it.
I mean, there could be an easy lore-related reason. The gun mounts on the Titans just don't support such tiny weapons. Period. What's wrong with that?
Like Donald Trump, tiny hands.
Yes. Tiny hands need tiny guns. Big hands, big guns.
I'd be more like the... So, because the turret hardpoints, because a Titan is so big, I like it to be the hardpoints on the Titan are so spread out, and the Haws would have such short range that when you try to shoot things and track things, you end up shooting the Titan itself, because the turret has to fire through the Titan to shoot whatever it's shooting. That'd be my reason. It's like, because the Titan hull is massive, so if you actually had like a turret on one side of the hull and then a turret all the way on the other side of the hull, like the range difference between those is like the entire range of the Haw. But that's not how Eve works, so.
Yeah. But there is some hope out there for you Titan hunters. A new Triglavian dreadnought. Oh, yes.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's being built in a special thingy, but it's not being introduced yet.
Oh, but like, it wouldn't drop it if it wasn't coming.
You say that, but like... I'm trying to think of any instances in which they have done this and they haven't dropped it, and I can't think of any, so you may have a point.
So not coming out in the next balance patch, but likely coming up pretty soon, since they're already hyping it up. We may get our first Triglavian capital ship. I'm very excited. Obviously don't really know what it looks like yet, we don't know what it's called, we don't know what the numbers are, but if you think about what circumstances a dreadnought would have to shoot at something for a long time to account for the ramp-up time of the Triglavian weapon system, supercapitals and Rorquals tend to fit that bill. Did we mention the Rorqual nerf?
We didn't.
We have not yet.
Oh yeah, that's probably a thing. Rorquals can be much easier to kill and making a little less money. Lave, do you want to break it down?
Yeah, so they are getting... So the Industrial Core, which is basically the Rorqual's ability to siege, gives normally granted a bonus to its shield repairer amount, so its local shield boosters. And previously they took off the ability for Rorquals to have multiple ancillary boosters, because that was just insanity. They're now going a step further by reducing the bonus that these ships get, effectively cutting it almost in half. So... Previously, they'd get 120% bonus to T1 cores. It's now 60, and previously they got the 140% bonus to T2. It's now 75. So their shield boosters are going to be less effective.
I'm going to bring in my do the interdiction first, but I'm going to bring in my host highlight here because it's quite relevant. But go.
Panic is getting reduced. So the duration is going down from 4 minutes maximum duration to 4 minutes to 6 minutes, I think it was. So basically, when it panics, it can now sit there for something less time. And there's a couple more changes to the excavators. I'm not sure if this is when you want to segue in.
Oh, it's just real quick. Excavators are getting, I believe it's a velocity nerf, so it takes longer for them to do stuff.
No, they're getting a yield decrease.
Oh, yield decrease.
And a cycle time increase as well. So they're basically going to lose ore per second, if you will, which is per second, so basically.
The mining drones, their yield is based on their mining yield, and so that is getting reduced by 20%. And the ice harvester drones, their yield is determined by their cycle time, and that is getting increased. It's also worth noting that the cycle time on the ice harvesting drones currently is so short, especially when you're in siege, that they don't go very far away from your ship. And so the nerf to the ice harvesting drones is more than what it actually looks like, because your drones will be traveling further from your ship now and will therefore have longer to travel back to your ship. And so your yield is actually getting reduced more than it looks like on paper due to that added travel time.
In addition, the excavators are also becoming fatter. So they currently are 750 meters cubed. They're now going up to 1,100 meters. Now, this is important because A typical strategy for a roll call is to deploy a mobile depot, usually a Wii 2-class mobile depot. And what these things do is they allow you to stick your expensive drones in them in the event that you're tackled, so that if you die, you don't have 5 billion plus of drone on your kill mail. The Wii 2 gets reinforced, but you can come back with it, come back and rescue your drones at a later date. Now, you can't fit all of your drones into the Wii 2. I mean, you can get 3 in.
So, Roracle kill mills just got 2 billion more expensive. Speaking of Roracle kill mills.
Yes, I finally got one. Oh god, I've been waiting for so long. So, part of not being in a very big corporate alliance means that when I go hunting out in Nullsec and I come across a Roracle, I often could tackle it, but can't kill it, because there's no way one ship is doing that. But I finally came across the perfect set of circumstances to get one. Some friends of mine in Whiskey had tackled a Rorqual in PUC, Great Wildlands. PUC or PUZ, I forget, it's one of the two. And I'm like, oh yes, the time has come. I'm like, alright, I'm coming. I brought my neutralizing carrier, neutralizing apostle that I had set in N6. I fit it up for the Ebola War, but I never actually got the chance to use it. I was like, oh god, this is the moment. I'm gonna shine. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be like that Providence Raven all over again, where I kill it with neutralizer drones. So I do light a Sino, I jump in the Apostle. They already have it tackled with a bunch of subcaps. And they're putting damage into it. I'm like, alright, this is gonna be easy, man. I'm gonna turn off his shield booster, dude's gonna die. Start neuting him out. He's still boosting. Like, okay. Keep neuting him out. Cycling 6 capital reps. 6 capital, newts. Excuse me, capital newts. 6 capital newts spaced out. He just keeps repping. Dude must have had a double cap booster fit.
He did.
I was running out of charges faster than this dude. I'm like, oh, this isn't great. So we're working on getting dreadnoughts in. We have one dreadnought from Whiskey on the way, and eventually Templus Calcif decided they wanted to help too. And we're like, oh yeah, we got some dreads too. So it took a while to get them, but we eventually got 3 dreadnoughts in. Finally put 3 dreadnoughts on field, and I resume neutralizing. This is after he finally hits panic. So we're just hanging with the dreads. Panic comes up. Dreads start shooting again. I start neutering him again. He's still repping through everything. It's like 3 dreadnoughts, 10 subs, and a neutralizing apostle. Nothing is happening. For like 30, 40 minutes. Finally, eventually, he starts to not cycle his shield booster as often. And we finally start going through him. That is fucking ridiculous. Like, what?
4 million damage this guy took.
It boggles the mind that a mining ship is that tough.
To be fair, he did have a full, like, Dead Space faction. Like, he didn't have A-type, he only had Pithom C-type invulns, but he had X-type SBAs, he had a Concord shield boost amp, and he even splurged, he cut his mining output, dropped the T1 drone mining augmenter for an EM screen reinforcer. So, plus he had both the shield links in. Like, this guy, he's properly fit. He's good to go.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly put the money in to do that kind of thing, but it still blew my mind that he was able to pull it off. I mean, we were hitting him with a lot of damage. And like I said, so many capital newts. And I know how to neutralize a ship. I'm one of my favorite types of ships are cap warfare ships. So I had them spaced out really nicely, but he was still getting those boosts in. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with go ahead.
Yeah,
the shit is gross. Sorry.
That is one of my favorite memories in NMC, rest in peace. Was when we tackled a Rorqual over in Russian territory, and we were in the AB retributions, and they brought in loads of missile ships thinking they'd eat us all up, and we just ate them all up as well. But we were shooting this thing for a good 35, 40 minutes as well until they dropped caps.
That's a shout out to that Rorqual pilot for sure. I understand not wanting to get killed.
If you ever do your trip again, gotcha, just do it in her work. Not a worry.
Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely needed a slight nerf off of that experience. Like, what we had on field, it should have been reasonable to kill one capital ship. Like you said, they're getting a Triglavian Dread. We're also getting some other Triglavian ships. These are coming with the next patch. An Assault Frigate, a Command Destroyer, and a Hack. I am pretty excited about the potential here.
So the Assault Frigate's interesting. I mean, the current meta is quite interesting with Assault Frigates, but the current T1 mod of the Damovik really suffers from an identity crisis. And I'd be interested to see if they're going to push it. They're going to be more of an identity crisis Assault Frigate ship, like an old-style Jaguar, which was, I think it was a 4-4-4 slot layout, or if they're just going to say, screw it, we're going with armor, and then it basically goes head up against the Retribution.
Well, I gotta believe they're gonna go the armor route. I expect an extra low slot. I expect some resist bonus, or not resist bonus, but like natural resistances. I don't know what the second set of Triglavian bonuses is going to be.
They're gonna increase the maximum cap, I think, of the damage, so basically it can ramp up higher.
I like that. Maybe it also ramps up the speed at which it goes. If that's the bonuses their T2s get, I'm fine with it. Where it goes up against the Retribution, that's a good question. I would like to believe the Retribution will still have an edge in range.
I mean, the Retribution has really good explosive resistance just naturally, because obviously in most T2 ships, when their T2 resistances are geared towards their enemies. So Mimitar ships in T2 have really good EM resistances and thermal resistances. So the wolf, trying to shoot wolves with lasers is just nightmarish because they've got a base 90%. On the opposite side of things, Amar have really good kinetic and explosive resistances. And if you, for some bizarre reason, see a shield T2 Amar ship, which you never do, trying to shoot them with those damage types is ridiculous as well. But I'd be interested to see where the Triglavian T2 is going to be, because who are their natural enemies, if you will?
Well, the sleepers and the rogue drones, yeah.
Yeah, and the sleepers do omni damage, but rogue drones do mostly explosive, kinetic, and thermal, with explosive and kinetic being the highest. So that would overlap with the Amar resist profile. And one of the things about the way that the resist profiles are best against their enemy is they're usually sort of flipped to whatever their own weapon system does. So like the Amar, they do high EM thermal, they have strong kinetic explosive resist. It gets funky with the Kaldari and the Galente, but you gotta remember Kaldari does mostly kinetic damage. A lot of them had kinetic resist or kinetic damage lock for a while. And so their first resist, their primary T2 resist is thermal. Their secondary is kinetic. And similarly, blasters do higher thermal damage than kinetic damage for most ammo types. And so that's why the Galente, their primary T2 resist is kinetic and their secondary is thermal. So my expectation is the primary resist for the Triglavian ships is going to be kinetic because of the rogue drones being their enemy, and their secondary is going to be EM because that is the other resist which they could take from omni damage from the from the sleepers. And it would be opposite of what their own weapon system does, which is currently thermal and explosive. That is,
or maybe they will lean into the sleeper thing and they'll give them a smaller resist increase to everything.
That would be freaking OP.
That would be OP.
I mean,
it's a possibility.
These ships are going to be nuts because ADCs on this nonsense. And can you imagine the Boosh fleets when your Boosher is also just a Kiki?
It's going to be brilliant, man. I'm very interested to see the slot layout of the Draugr, I think it's called.
It's going to be strange because the Magus and the Amar variant, the Pontifex, they have drones as damage systems, and the Bifrost and the Stork have missiles as damage systems. So none of these ships are really turret-based. So the Draugr is going to be if it does indeed have a disruptor or disintegrator, it's going to be the first command destroyer with a turret-based weapon system as well, which already I think pushes it against ahead of its competition.
If it has a fourth mid, I'm I don't see the Magus competing with it anymore. Like, at the moment, the Magus is the best Command Destroyer because it has the fourth mid slot. If the Dregor has it, but then doesn't have to risk leaving its drones behind if it needs to warp out very quickly, that's pretty big.
1,000 DPS.
Yeah.
Yep.
Honestly, the hack, though, the hack is going to be meta-defining for wormholes in low sec, I think. And even, like, the small gang capital-killing null sec roaming things. Because currently you've got the Dracovic to do that, but Dracovic doesn't have T2 resist. It doesn't have the ADC. You're probably going to get more DPS with the hack, I think, because hacks typically have more DPS than battlecruisers, if memory serves, just in general.
Not always. I mean, the Dracovic does get a decent damage bonus, and I think it does have a resistance bonus as well, but you're right, it's not going to have the base T2, nor the maneuverability of this thing.
You are going to lose links, so that is a definite hit. I'm not sure, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, the Dracovic may be better than the hack. Especially when you consider the cost.
Guys, it is not based on the Dracovic.
Yeah, we're comparing which one is going to be stronger for like these things. Definitely wormholes, the lower mass of the hack is going to be helpful.
Well, what I'm saying is, you guys are kind of assuming it's going to be more of like a sacrilege style tanky thing. But the Vegmak is not that. The Vegmak has more in common with a Vagabond or an Open Navy issue than it does with the Dracovic.
So you think this is going to be like a Zealot with 1,000 DPS?
I think it could be. I think it could be a really high DPS Vagabond.
That
armor tanks. That's what I see. I mean, it already... I mean, if it's even a little bit more fast, it's going to put the bag in a really rough spot.
It's gonna basically do better at what Deimos should be doing, which is close range, eat everything, because its tracking is going... The disintegrator tracking is ridiculous as well.
It's not even that bad on the range. I've been flying a Vedmak around recently. I'm able to hit at point range, no problem, full damage.
Which you can't do with blasters.
Mm-hmm. You could with rails if you wanted to. But people running a nano rail Deimos is pretty rare.
You do see them, but yeah, you're right. You tend to see the Vigilance more in that role.
Question for you guys. Does anybody know... So we're also getting damage control mutoplasmids. Does that include assault damage control mutoplasmids?
It does.
Oh. That's going to be nuts.
Shut up and take my money.
Holy cow.
Yeah, if you're so inclined, you could do that.
I mean, if people still have the role, the mutoplasmids for Ansel reps, Ansel armor reps from the Secrets of the Abyss event, like literally every single module except for the disintegrator itself on one of these heavy assault cruisers could be abyssal rolled.
Mm-hmm. You want to get a real pimp chariot going on? You can do that. I'm pretty excited to see what direction these go in. I'm going to be very curious to see what the bonuses are for these. Like, what do T2 Triglavian bonuses look like? I know we have the T2 Logi ship, but that's a pretty special case.
What is the resist profile on the Logi ship? Why have we been pushing resist profile? That like answers our question.
Quick, to the Bifa.
There's gotta be like listeners just face palming right now.
What do they talk about the logistics ship? I'm pulling it up, hold on. The Zarmazad, which I've never actually seen in combat here, they get...
Explosive kinetic.
Looks like explosive EM and kinetic. No, explosive kinetic. Reduced EM.
Yeah, like it's just... It's like Amar, but better.
Yeah.
It is literally, this thing is going to be like a freaking Zealot on steroids.
And we were just hoping we'd see the Zealot again.
Now, looking at their logistics cruiser bonus, you know, it's not the same, but it's getting a mount and cap need. Oh, I think you're onto something, Lave, with the ramp cap being higher by some percentage. I think that'd be fascinating. Well, I hope that's the direction they go.
I don't think they'll get there faster, but I think its potential will be higher, but it just requires staying in range out long, which is the trade-off.
Well, yeah. because the ramp is dependent on cycle time, you could do like what they do with the battleships, which is if you increase the cycle time, they will ramp up faster.
What I think what Lave is saying is that it still takes the same amount of time to ramp up, but there's just a higher ceiling.
Ah, gotcha.
Which I really love for the assault frigate in particular, but I think the hack would also work well.
I still can't believe how much the Kikimura eats everything else at close range, and the fact that it gets full spool up in within about a minute.
I expect the Dragoar, because it's going Command Destroyer, its combat capabilities will probably be not much higher than the Kikimura.
I think it won't have the range of the Kiki, which is its biggest strength.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. But it'll have the jump field thing, so it won't need that.
I gotta be honest, though, I'm most looking forward to making loads of money farming Abyssal Sites. Because these things are gonna be expensive for a long freaking time. Not to mention all the new skill books. Like, that is 3 new skill books.
Mm-hmm. Alright, guys, we gotta move on. We'll talk a little bit more about the stuff going down in subspace on the next show, along with the CSM minutes. Basically, Frat and Legacy are starting to shoot each other like we expected. Nothing huge, though. Tess did lose some Titans and Supers to a Snuff Dread Bomb. But, you know, same shit, different week. Nothing huge has happened yet. We will keep you abreast of any developments.
The Russian Coalition has a name now. FI.RE. It's supposed to stand for Final Reunion, but it spells out fire. It's like, there's a whole, like, they've been putting up pretty good propaganda, actually. And they did, a diplomat for XXDeath did a really good interview piece with the NER about, like, the coalition and XXDeath continuing to survive after the fall of DRF. I'd highly recommend people go and check that out. Maybe we can get it linked in the show notes somewhere.
All right, Artemis, your host highlight.
Cool. So my host highlight is that, like, null block life is easy, Eve on easy mode. Like, it is legitimately just freaking Care Bear, no problem. Space is safe, even in Horde space, where, like, we literally have rules in Horde where you're not allowed to drop caps on things because they want people to come and fight, which I don't mind, like, whatever. So, like, our space is roamed more often than all other space, and even still, my VNIs can just be out there making ISK all the time, no problem. I did a bit of Hod Red ratting as well, gonna get the Rorqual up and running soon, and then just ping warrioring it up. There's a ping, hop in fleet, collect kill mills, rinse and repeat. Freaking Eve on easy mode, dude.
Do you find it making Eve less satisfying?
Maybe, except for that I have started phase one of a super secret plan, and so that is sort of fulfilling the Eve itch is being scratched, so to speak. It doesn't involve much PvP at the moment, so the PvP itch is getting scratched by ping warrioring, but the sort of exploring the sandbox aspect is being supplemented by other projects.
Lave?
Completely non-related, but I used to be a big player of Borderlands, and seeing the Borderlands 3 reveal recently, I'm in two minds. Obviously, part of me is like, yes, fantastic. The other side is, we're seeing another shooter into a fairly crowded area now, so I kind of hope it brings a lot new to the table. I realize it's completely non-Eve related.
What other shooter has guns with legs?
I mean, every shooter, if you think about it.
I wasn't going to say that.
Gotcha.
Oh man, so much has happened in the last couple of weeks. Hearing Fozzie talk about at Easterdam how this achievement just cast a wide net of folks that it excited at CCP was really awesome to hear. And then Falcon revealing the monument as a role player is just to have your character written into lore is one thing, but to actually have a tangible monument that your character and your corp are recognized in is just amazing.
Yeah, I'm so happy for you, dude. That's so cool.
Thanks. It is pretty cool, I have to admit.
And finally, real quick, we got to get some shout-outs out. I got to give a shout-out to Rockadex, leader of Wrecking Crew. A really cool dude. It's almost hilarious to think of, like, how we first met each other to our relationship now. He's a good guy. We've talked a lot on Discord lately. I really like the way he, you know, runs things in Wrecking Crew. The first time we ever met him was killing his carrier in LoSec after he accidentally warped it to a gate. And him claiming, like, that he warped inside of the station, like he was docked and warped. And we had such a good time making fun of him in Noir for that, because he was very, very mad. And so Rockadex was, like, a running reference for a long time. But he's so much more than that. So, cool dude. Really glad I'm getting to know him better. And just wanted to give him a shout. Lave?
It's interesting because Shadow Cartel has deployed down to your neck of the woods, Alex. I'm sure we'll be seeing each other a bit more often. My shout out goes to the
Fate. Oh, that's good. Are we blue to each other? I don't even know.
I have no clue, Dennis. We'll find out.
Are we shooting each other?
I don't know if we're shooting each other. I mean, I'm guessing you guys may have been there recently when Snuff reinforced the.
I guess that maybe so. I hear you keying up late, but I can't hear you. Oh, that's me. Never mind. There we go. Okay. What'd you say, Lee?
So, I'm sure you were there when Snuff reinforced the Kamal Keepstar. We pushed it to final timer. North backphoned hugely. Snuff and Initiative jumped their Titan fleets into range, looked at all the subs against them, and then promptly jumped them out of range. So the Kamal Keepstar was saved. But yeah, we're in the region. Likely going to be poking some old friends in Provi Block. But to be fair, even in our days, we had great little fights, farming, killing Provi Block. They are the guys that keep on giving, good people. And all I will say to Provi Op is, Kapla. We will see you soon.
Artie?
My shout-out goes to Talking in Stations. For the listeners who aren't familiar, I'm the host of the Midweek Show over on Talking in Stations. So that's been going pretty good. It started up just this year. And in fact, a bunch of new stuff is happening with Talking in Stations. Like, a bunch of cool new projects are in the works, and the current projects are just continuously getting better. So shout out to those guys, and especially, like, shout out to Alec, who has stepped up and hopped on the TIS crew. He was sort of kidnapped in the last meeting we had, and has volunteered to do a VOD review thing, where basically people can submit VODs of their PvP, and Alec will live on stream review your footage and talk about what you could do better. We're still working out the details of how to get your VODs submitted and how to get it reviewed and things like that. But be on the lookout for that, because it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, have you ever, like, wanted the experience of being in Noir and having Alec yell at you, but you kind of missed the boat? Well, now's your chance.
Oh, man, are we getting angry, Alec?
I have to talk to him about it, whether he wants, how professional and reserved he wants me to be here, or if I can, like, be more honest with our listener base, you know?
I am 100% going to lobby hard for angry Alec.
It could be a healthy mix. We'll see how bad some of these VODs are. I better not see any close-range vagabonds. I better not see any interceptors without damage controls. Arazus. Just don't trigger me, guys. Don't trigger me. All right, gotcha.
You know, I was making an extraordinary claim that I'd visited every system and that I'd done it without losing a ship. And I can't shout out enough Minxy and Thrice Hapus, the leadership of Signal Cartel, just taking me at my word, quite honestly, that I was about to achieve this, and not knowing if CCP would actually recognize it or not. So they effectively were putting Signal Cartel's reputation on the line on my behalf. So huge shout out to them and Signal Cartel for helping me get the last 600, and iGaze, Captain Crinkle, and Tamayo for helping me secure those last 600 systems. It's an amazing family, amazing group of folks. I couldn't have done it without them.
All right, guys. Well, that's it. Head to declarationsword.com. We got the polls. We got information on our corp recruitment. Capitalist Army still looking for folks as usual. We are now in Templis Calcif. Things are going pretty well in the Alliance. I'm really happy there at the moment. So, pretty good time to join. And with that said, check out ICO. Is your statue live, or when is it going live? Do you know, Katya?
April release is what we're hearing. It's supposed to be on the test system this week, but it doesn't look like it's there yet. So I think the pieces and parts are there, but it's not visible yet.
All right, April release. Make sure you take time to head out to ICO to check that out. It's going to be pretty cool. I know that I'm going to be there.
Katya, you also have a blog, right?
I do have a blog, yeah.
Oh, plug that blog, man.
You always forget about that part, right? www.saganexplorations.net is where you can read about all my adventures over the years.
Awesome. And wherever you are, whatever system, good hunting, listeners.